Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, a super special and exclusive conversation in person at the Turning Point USA Student Action Summit. If you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions about this episode, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to get in the running to win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, all you have to do is say, Charlie, I listened to this episode, but you have to make sure you subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show. So take out your phone, get to your podcast provider, podcast or Spotify. Without any further ado, buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Truth is so important to me. Pursuing truth is a huge part of who I am and what I stand for. When you look around at what's happening to our country, you can see why many people are experiencing real frustration with the news media, along with feelings of uncertainty and a lack of hope for the future. How can we know which news is true, and where or in whom can we place our trust? The only place I've found unwavering truth and peace is in my faith in Jesus Christ. If 2020 has beaten down your spirit, I'd like to recommend a book to you called Reflections on the Existence of God by best-selling author Richard Simmons III. Reflections on the Existence of God is a collection of short essays that tackles the biggest question of all: does God exist? This book is well-researched and easy to read. Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, quote, I've taught apologetics for many years and have read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. I challenge you right now to get your copy of Reflections on the Existence of God by Richard Simmons III. Go to reflectionscharlie.com. That's reflectionscharlie.com.
You want to talk about one of the most important discussions that's going to happen in the entire country? This is the panel. This is the panel that we're not supposed to have this conversation. The tech companies might just shut us off completely and totally. But I can't think of three better panelists to talk about election fraud, voter fraud, what happened in early November. We are unafraid to have these discussions and to name names and talk about exactly what happened in the Great Steal. And so that's exactly what we're going to do. So I want to introduce our panelists here. The heroic Matt Brainerd from the Voter Integrity Project. Matt stepped up after what happened in early November, when we saw all these results, these irregularities come in a way that quite honestly made all of us question the very way we elect our leaders. Matt stepped up and he said, I'm going to start to do independent data analysis. I'm going to start to call people to find out if they actually requested ballots. He's done the very difficult work, and you probably saw him testify in front of Arizona, in the Arizona House recently. Richard Barris from the People's Pundit, probably one of the best data minds. I call him, hopefully, the new Nate Silver, because Nate Silver is awful, and Richard Barris really has been amazing. Kyle Becker, you probably see him quite a lot on Twitter. Kyle Becker has been doing amazing work looking into Dominion voting systems, amongst many other things. And so we have an amazing panel here, and we're blessed to be here. Okay, Kyle, let's start with you. Was the election stolen?
Stolen? I would say that there are several suspect characters in swing states around the country. We've seen them ourselves on video in Fulton County. We've seen numerous sworn witnesses come forward and testify exactly to that it was stolen, that they prevented observers from seeing the shady business that is presumably going on behind closed doors. And we saw that in Michigan. So we have to point the finger exactly at who is suspect, and that is all these local poll workers who we're not allowed to monitor in a supposedly free country. And we need to have democratic accountability, more transparency. And the fact that they're not giving us transparency should make us have all the red flags in the world that we as citizens have to go after them and really get to the bottom of this. And our media is failing us. So as independents around the country, we need to really hold their feet to the fire, and people need to be prosecuted in this country if they are any way involved in ballot manipulation or in trying to make sure that our president of the United States is no longer the leader of this free country. So.
And you look at what happened. I mean, there's the Nevada Native Project where they were offering cash for ballots. We have the whistleblower in Wisconsin who came out and she communicates to all of her developmentally disabled elderly patients via Zoom. And all of them came out and they said people came into the nursing homes filling out ballots for Joe Biden. I mean, she came out as a whistleblower and no federal investigation into that, no investigation into that from the Wisconsin Attorney General's office that we know of. The 1,774% increase in voter registration for 90-plus-year-olds in the midst of a pandemic. We're supposed to believe this, that all of a sudden 90-plus-year-olds in Pennsylvania started to say, you know what, now I want to go register to vote for the first time in my life in the midst of a pandemic. Who is registering them to vote? Who is going to these centers and doing that? And it almost, it makes it so obvious that this practice of ballot laundering was occurring. Richard, can you talk about how there was county irregularities, how there were nationwide trends, and then it just so happens that there were a couple cities and areas that mattered that did not fit all those other trends?
Look at Iowa. So Iowa, we have pivot counties. We call them pivot counties, swing counties, whatever you want to call them. Iowa is the state with the largest number of pivot counties in the entire country, 31. Represents about 26% of the total statewide vote. And these are counties that voted for Barack Obama twice. You could even go back to George W. Bush. These counties go 60 years with predictive value. Last four cycles, rolling cycles, some of them have 100% predictive value. Joe Biden did not flip a single pivot county in Iowa, the state with the most pivot counties. Juneau County, Wisconsin, 60%+ for Donald Trump. Joe Biden won less than half of the number of counties that Barack Obama won, even though he lost millions of votes when he won re-election. 477. So this from a numbers point of view and from a history point of view, I'm an election model guy. This is not, if you would have told me this a month before the election, I would have said this would have been a Trump landslide. So if you would have given me just these indicators, Rich, what if Joe Biden only won 477 counties? What if Joe Biden didn't flip Woods County? He couldn't flip Trumbull County in Ohio. I tell you, he's done. It's over. Trump won this election in a landslide. What if Donald Trump won 3% in Florida by 3%? And increased his share in Miami-Dade to 45% in Broward County, in the mid-30s. I tell you, this was a Trump landslide. So we're talking about predictors that have been right all the time for years. They're all wrong for the first time this cycle. It's odd.
Can you also talk about how President Trump did better with blacks and Hispanics? But not in the certain counties or the areas that seem to be the swing areas.
So Nevada's a perfect example of that. So if you believe the exit polls, and if you just look at where the votes come from, he won more than 40% of the Hispanic vote in that state. He was at mid-40s in Clark County. And yeah, Washoe lagged a little bit. So that would be where critics would point to. But any election cycle before this, they would tell you that that is the formula to win the state of Nevada. If you want to take the silver state, keep it in the mid-40s in Clark County and win more than 40% of the Hispanic vote. And you will win that as a Republican. And yet he lost. I mean, it's just odd. So we get a lot of these first this cycle that just really, you know, they're hard to explain.
Well, there's one explanation. So Matt,
there is.
So you started to do the difficult work and necessary work to look into, can we start to prove some of this? And one video that I encourage all of you to find, it's probably censored, so it's hard to find, is when you were calling, your call center were calling people, and you said, did you request an absentee ballot? And they said, no, I did not. And yet it showed on the public record in Arizona they did. Can you talk about some of the work you did and some of the discoveries that you've made in the last couple of weeks?
Sure. So we really focused on trying to provide stuff that would be actionable to a state legislature or in a court of law, concrete things, nothing that was speculative. And we found over and over again consistent problems in state after state after state, specifically cases where people were telling us that, you know, we would just take a sample of voter universe and just ask, hey, did you actually cast a ballot? And we'd have people telling us over and over again, I didn't cast a ballot, even though the state said they did. My favorite case of this was a gentleman we didn't even reach directly via phone. We left him a voice message, and then somebody messaged me and said, hey, your project's on the Laura Ingraham show on Fox News. I'm like, what are you talking about? Because this was when we were still at the very earliest stage. Well, we had left this gentleman a voice message. His name is Nashawn Garrett in Arizona. He hasn't been in Arizona for several years. But he got a voice message from us saying, hey, the state of Arizona says you cast a ballot. You may be the victim of voter fraud if you did not. He did not. He looked up his own record on his own. And he found that the state of Arizona did not just have him marked as voting, but had him marked as signature verified as casting a ballot. And he tweeted about it, and somebody picked it up. He ended up on Laura Ingraham's program. We're very proud of that. But here's what puzzles me is that in all of these anomalies we found people who've moved out of state shopping where they want to cast their ballot. And, you know, and I've had many anecdotal evidence because it's very funny since as this project's become a little bit more notorious, people start emailing me evidence, you know, on their own anecdotal, you know, reporting on their family members they don't like very much, saying, hey, I think this person voted twice. This is my sister-in-law. I just see if you can do something about it. Just don't use my name, okay? Seriously, it's overwhelming. But the most common thing I'm getting are people saying, hey, this person has lived in New York City for the last 8 years. They proudly told everyone in the office they cast a ballot in Georgia. And we found tremendous evidence of this, far more than the margin of victory in that state. And if you think about what's happening here is that we all, are we fans of the Electoral College in this room? We know the other side is not. They want to get rid of it. One way they get rid of it is letting people vote wherever the hell they feel like it. Because that is, they are neutralizing the Electoral College. And remember, we know what the great compromise was in this country with, between the House and the Senate, the large states and the small states. That was, without that, there would not have been a United States. The agreement that every state got two senators, but the House is based on population, that negotiation. Well, when you have people voting in the state of choice, they're also neutralizing that as well, because you have people who don't live in Georgia or casting ballots in the Senate, right, as is happening right now in the runoff. So what's so troubling is that we find these like dynamite examples, massive amounts of data, but the people who have the ability to really do something about it, which are in many cases, Republicans in these state legislatures, state government, hands off. Like, why can't we get an answer on what happened? How did Nashawn Garrett get marked? It's not a common name, and there's no, like, guy with the same name or same birthday. No, it's his voter registration from when he lived there a few years ago before he went to become, you know, an all-star wrestler in Tennessee or something. Why hasn't the government in Arizona figured out, wait, how did this happen? Just this one case, just this one guy. Let's just figure out nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Not even the Arizona Attorney General, who's a Republican, or the Arizona Governor's office. No one.
Here's the problem, is that many of these guys, they came out very early and said there were no problems. They said there was no evidence. Now, how can you determine that there's no evidence of voter irregularities, voter fraud, illegal ballots, whatever you want to call it, if you didn't go out and look for it? And if you, right. If you came out and said that, there were no problems, and then problems are discovered on your watch. What do you think that does to what matters more to these people than anything? Their political career. What do you think that does to their political career when they say, oh, everything was fine, and then we start seeing these problems? I want to share with, if I can share with you, I've talked to many state legislatures, publicly and also privately. I've had groups of legislators from at least six states come and talk to me directly about some of the stuff we found. And one of the conversations I had with one group, I'm not going to say who it was, But they said to me, so if we determined that there are more illegal ballots than the margin of victory, what would you suggest we do? And I said, well, you have to withhold your electors, right? Because you have no confidence in who is the deserved winner in your state. You have to withhold your electors. And they're like, oh, okay, that seems reasonable. But I wasn't finished. I said, also, everybody in state government has to resign, all the elected officials, because you did this. This is on you. Your mismanagement disenfranchised an entire state. This is historic. So because of that, everybody in the state government has to resign. You all have to resign if you withhold them because it was your fault. And they were like, oh, no. Well, you can't. Please, don't say that. Don't say that. And it terrified them that would be the next logical step. If you're the Secretary of State in one of these states where this happened, there's truly evidence of fraud, you're done. But what they're not realizing, I don't think they thought this through, is that if they didn't stand up and fight for it, you're going to hold them accountable in their primaries. These Secretary of States, they thought by saying there's no problem would save their political careers, but by saying there's no problem and not taking this fraud seriously, they finished their political careers, and it's up to you to make sure that happens.
And so we're talking about, and by the way, we're talking about very slim margins here currently. Georgia margin is, with Trump and Biden,
12,000.
Arizona's 10,000, right? Wisconsin's 20,000. Is that correct? That's just about right. And so we're talking about, if all of a sudden you have the ballot laundering, the voter registration issues, signature verification issues, relaxation of standards, certain Trump County district ballots go missing, all this stuff starts to add up into what is called their margin. And here's a very simple way that the media can never explain it. Who here knows someone or your parents that got ballots they didn't request? Anyone got? Yeah, exactly. You're trying to tell me that half the room, hands go up, that every single person who got ballots they didn't request didn't all of a sudden try to do something with that? You want to go prove voter fraud? Go look at Google search trends of how many people were looking into Google. How do I sell a ballot in early October? And then go look into, like a week later, can I go to jail for selling a ballot? No, seriously. And, you know, the media says, well, that's not evidence. Okay, you're right. That's probably not evidence that if I was the U.S. Attorney's Office, I probably couldn't use that. That's enough evidence for me to say that there's voter fraud is real. Okay, that's plenty of evidence to say that. And that's just one piece of it. They cannot explain how President Trump did better in Chicago, Boston, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and L.A. He did better in the Rio Grande Valley. He did better in Miami, Florida. But you win Florida by 400,000 votes and you lose Georgia. You win North Carolina by 110,000 votes and you lose Georgia. And Georgia is a very interesting example because it's almost all because of weak Republicans that did the civil settlement with Stacey Abrams on the signature verification front. And this is a very important point, is that they made voter fraud probably legal. I know that sounds weird. You're like, what do you mean voter fraud legal? They changed the rules of signature verification. So you could just randomly scribble and that's the new rule. And so it's impossible to actually tell if that person actually voted or not. There's a Georgia state senator. I can't remember his name. Really great guy. He tweeted this out recently. In late November, he was voting in this runoff and he decided to test the signature, kind of integrity of the Georgia system. And so he has his driver's license, which is how they're supposed to check signatures and what his signature looks like. And then he has what he submitted, and they're completely different. And it submitted his ballot totally. It submitted his ballot. And no one can tell me that when you have this much hatred towards Donald Trump, they've told us they will do whatever is necessary. And I say this, and it's a provocative thing to say, but it's true. If I believe Benito Mussolini was in the White House, I would cheat. I would. If I actually thought that Joseph Stalin was running our country, then I would cut corners. That's what they think. They're idiots for thinking that. But the point is that when they've convinced themselves that they're actually going up against the manifestation of the National Socialist Workers Party in the 1930s, then all this stuff starts to make sense. And then it gets into the vote counting process, Kyle. What is Dominion voting systems and who owns Dominion?
Well, John Polis had started Dominion in Toronto. It was a foreign-based company, and then it was purchased by Staple Street Investors in New York City. So it has its roots in Canada, and it has been involved in shady business all over around the world. It has purchased for scandal-ridden companies like Sequoia, which was a Smartmatic subsidiary. It purchased Diebold, which was a subsidiary Premier. If you look at these companies, they have been under the gun for involved in scandalous elections and fraudulent elections around the world. So Dominion voting systems is like, I liken it to like a Trojan horse. While we were sleeping, we wheeled them into our precincts and our counties. Georgia tried to fight them for this $106 million contract. And if you look at the lawsuit, it points out, you know, the experts that they brought in, it said how vulnerable to fraud Dominion voting systems is.
We've had experts at Princeton, like Dr. Andrew Appel. We've had Jonathan Alderman at University of Michigan. We've had white hat hackers like Harry Hursty. If you go look at Kill Chain on HBO, Harry Hursty comes out and shows you at the DEF CON conference that these machines are not trustworthy whatsoever. So let's go to Georgia, because I think Georgia is one of my favorite places to look at, because we have the State Vote Farm Arena video that shows these workers. They come in, they send people home. We have ABC News corroborating this. Okay, we have the Georgia state senators corroborating this. They were sent home, and even the supposed fact check corroborates the main complaints. They were sent home, that ballots were counted without supervision. And so what do we see on the time-stamped closed caption TV video? I mean, you can't make this up. It's almost hilarious, because they don't know they're on CCTV, apparently. It's like candy camera. So it's time-stamped. They go take the ballots. They run them to the tabulators. They come back. They check the computer screen. Okay, boop, boop. Go back. Grab the stack. Pick it out. Put it back. Count it like two or three different times. Okay, and if you look at the data from Fulton County, it shows not only a huge spike for Biden that did not make any sense, but a separation from Ossoff, too. So, like, it doesn't seem, it's just Biden. Wow, that's amazing. Just at the time where these people were sent home, there's a huge spike for Biden, and Ossoff is just kind of on the same level. Okay, so this was supposedly debunked. It's not. It was pre-bunked, even. Like, it was like, oh, you know, remember the state Senate hearing in Georgia? Oh, well, that's been debunked. No, this is the first time you're seeing it, lady. Okay, all right, I'll try to catch it. You know, so, I mean, it's like we're dealing with ridiculous people. They do not, they're just because they're an official does not mean they deserve any of our official respect. We're their bosses. We demand accountability and transparency. No private companies involved in our elections. The left needs to get on board with this, because they were screaming bloody murder before the 2020 election, right? If you go look at Politico magazine, if you go look at Bloomberg Opinion, if you look at PBS, you look at HBO, they're screaming bloody murder about private companies involved in our elections. We're the American people here. These people need to get in line. We're their boss, and we want these voting machines out of here. Get them out of here. Paper ballots, no servers, no manipulation. Show your work, because that's how democracies are supposed to run.
Getting in shape doesn't have to be about losing a specific amount of weight. All of you that are going into Thanksgiving and Christmas season, I know it's easy to put on a couple extra pounds. Pumpkin pie, stuffing, cranberry, just a little less activity than usual. I get it. Also, commit yourself to lose weight. And that's what Noom is all about. But it's more than just losing weight. It is a lifestyle changer. They take a physical, psychological, and social approach. You can integrate Noom into your life because you trust yourself to make good choices. The psychological part of it is the ability to make healthy choices more easily, understand your thought patterns better, a stronger sense of self-worth. Noom is the habit-changing solution that helps users learn to develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses. Based in psychology, Noom teaches you why you do the things you do and empowers you with the tools you need to break bad habits and replace them with better ones. If you go off track, that's okay. You're human. It's understandable. But Noom is able to really be able to encourage you and give you the data that you need, because it's based in psychology. Chat with a goal specialist and Noom community to get and give help to people going through the same things. You don't have to change it all in one day. Small steps make big progress. Sign up today at Noom.com, Noom.com/Charlie. That's Noom.com/Charlie.
So, Richard, can you go through just looking at what really started a lot of this conversation, quite honestly, around voter fraud? And we were covering this from the night of the, you know, night after the election, just because there was so much interest and people knew they were being lied to by people on television. They knew it. And they said, who's actually going to dive into this? And we started to look at the irregularities. We started to look not just the irregularities, but also how there were nationwide trends that made no sense. We won 27 out of 27 competitive House seats. Can you talk about how Republicans had a red wave everywhere, except in a couple places?
Yeah, so this is the odd thing. I mean, there's a number of predictive counties that we'll look at on election day. Soon as those results roll in, I look to Indiana. Indiana and Kentucky, they'll come in first. Vigo County will tell you immediately if you have a problem. It'll tell you immediately if you have a problem with a white woman voter. Donald Trump won Vigo County after Barack Obama did twice. Barack Obama carried it by a few points that last time, but he still held it. Donald Trump won it in 2016 by 15 points. In 2020, He won it by 15 points. Okay, so this is really across the board. 19 out of 20, I could just keep rolling them out. In Ohio, which we spoke about before, Joe Biden only performed marginally better than Hillary Clinton in 5 of those 31 pivot counties, and that's less than a few points. I'm not talking about 6-point swings, 7-point swings. I'm talking about 0.8, 1.2. You know, so not these huge margins that would tell you Donald Trump has a problem. And if you even go out west, Republicans did much better with certain groups of voters. Mike Garcia held his seat, a couple hundred votes, but he held it. Kim Jong, who had it robbed from her last time, she was the, have you ever seen a congressional candidate be declared the winner, go to Washington DC, get sworn in as a freshman congresswoman, and then get sent home? Imagine being young Kim. So she came back this time and she took that seat. And we see this in a lot of different areas. Salazar, Florida 27. She defeated Donna Shalala. These are seats, if you go back and you look at, I'll leave it out. I'll keep these guys' names out of it. But you go back and look at those other election models, which are not models.
Nate Silver.
They're glorified poll readers. They're frauds. All right. They're glorified poll readers. You don't need them. You could do it yourself. If you can read a poll, you can be them. You want me to tell you how Cook Politico Report does it? They take the PVI, they'll look at the national generic ballot, and they'll take that if, Florida 27 is D plus 6, and the generic ballot is currently D plus 5, well, that's a likely Democrat seat. That's it. I just taught you how to do their jobs. You don't need them. So ignore them. All right? Because it's garbage. All right? And in the end, when we go down their list of likely, leans, and competitive, the House for Republicans looked a lot historically like an incumbent reelection. An incumbent gets his butt kicked and his party gets his butt kicked in that first term incumbent midterm. And then when they're reelected, they come back and typically, historically, they will take back a lot of those gains, but likely not all of them. And if they want to recapture their House, they'll have to do it in a subsequent election. They'll fend off challenges from the upper chamber that they thought they were going to lose, like Maine. All right. Now, McSally was, I'm sure she's a very nice woman, but she is not a great candidate. All right. So she lost, and she lost to a very strong Democrat. And the proof was in, it was in the polling. Everybody saw it coming. But other challenges across the country, Republicans fend it off. That's a very typical incumbent reelection. That's what it looks like historically from any election forecaster's point of view. And yet he lost. So it's just all these things that just pile up, Charlie.
And we're not even supposed to talk about it. And
got to ignore him.
And so if Republicans lost dramatically in the House, if all these things happen, then this argument, you know, would kind of just fall apart. Matt, I want you to talk about Pennsylvania and and the kind of the Rust Belt, but Pennsylvania in particular. What was it about Pennsylvania? What have you found in that state? Because I believe that what happened in Philadelphia in particular was so suspicious. And correct me if I'm wrong, Allegheny County just took a day off from counting, like the day after the election. They just needed like a rest or a technical day. Tom Wolf is terrible. Can you help unpack that for us?
I mean, when the attorney general of the state declares ahead of the election outcome, who's going to win it? Pennsylvania is a peculiar state for Republicans because for so many of our candidates going back in time, it's always kind of been our white whale. You know, you saw Romney go hard, like this is the year we can finally get Pennsylvania. But we never really had a candidate that could unlock we could almost call them Reagan Democrats going way back. But this sort of the blue collar, often victims of what is often considered contemporary Republican politics, you know, the Jack Kemp politics. These are people who are often the victims of some of those policies, right? And they don't cotton to the typical Mitt Romney's or Bob Dole candidacies, but they found something in Trump that they had never found in Republican before. And we were able to unlock the Keystone State, historically. And then you have this election come. And what do we find? We find people who we identify as not living in that state casting ballots. We find people who did not request absentee ballots, who told us in great numbers, substantial numbers. And I'm not saying, well, we took a little sample and then you projected the whole universe and you get, you know, this many. No, we found a substantial number, well worthy of an investigation by the state, because in in fact, on all these states, with the exception of Nevada, you have to make that request yourself. Or you have to basically do a formal thing to let somebody else request it on your behalf. Or there's a lot of technical rules. Those ballots are not supposed to be flying out there like snowflakes in a blizzard, right? Like, which is what was happening. And we find this over and over again. And there's absolutely no interest in the national media in investigating it, in the state government. Now, we were contacted by the FBI. They said, look, we've seen what you find, send it to us. And I've worked with them in the past. It's always a one-way conversation. You send it to them. Maybe in a year or so you hear about a prosecution or a conviction or something like that based on what you've done with them. But I don't expect any, they're not calling me every day saying, hey, that's good stuff. Yeah, we're going to lock this guy up. That's just not how it's going to work. But it's mind-boggling because I know this is a young audience, but in the year 2000 in Florida, when there were just a few hundred votes separating the winners in that election, the media spent a few million dollars, the conglomerate of them, to go down there on their own. And did a manual hand recount, which reconfirmed that W had won that state. But they spent a fortune on that. You may remember when Sarah Palin's emails were hacked and leaked. Entire teams from the New York Times and Washington Post and mainstream media were assigned to investigate and go through every single one of those, all her little kids' appointments that she was driving them to, the keeping track through email. Right? Now we have this. And what's the response?
Crickets.
And not only that, but they're coming after folks like this. We're trying to keep you out of trouble here, Charlie, not saying anything too spicy up here. But just by having this conversation, we put ourselves at risk, and nobody, there's no illusions here about the mainstream media. They're basically a PR firm for the left, for the hard left, right? But none of them are going to come to our defense if we get zapped for this. So it boggles the mind. But here's what my biggest concern is. A really big concern about this issue is that because if it's not likely resolved in our favor this election, my fear is that people will give up hope and think that my vote doesn't matter. And, when I first started doing the Voter Integrity Project, I actually had a hope. I hoped that we would find that it was a clean election because I really wanted to, because there are other issues that we need to address. I kind of saw the voter fraud issue as a potential tar baby, because if we get locked into that, we miss another big problem, which is a voter registration problem. There were illegal ballots that I think were determinative in this election, but as determinative, if not more, were the additional 100,000 just Democrats that were registered in the state of Pennsylvania over the past 4 years, more so than Republicans. Every single one of these states, they were on the ground with billionaire money registering. In fact, in many cases, real people. In many cases, turning out real people who had never voted before, and we didn't have anything on our side to do that. So I was fearful that if we get all tied up in this voter fraud thing, we won't pay attention to that. So my hope is that we would find a clean election. Unfortunately, we didn't. But the other thing is, when I started, I was like, hey, if you're a Joe Biden fan, you believe in him, you should be rooting for our project, because we potentially could come out here and say, hey, it was good. We lost fair and square. We need to go back to the drawing board and take a hard lesson on this. You'd be rooting for it, right? But they were absolutely silent. And here's what's so nefarious is it's rational to believe that the idea of widespread voter fraud is helpful to the left. It's helpful to them, not only in that it's helpful because it may help them win elections, but it's helpful to them in the long term, because what it does is they think that it will demoralize folks. How many of you people have heard people say that, if they don't get this thing turned around, I'm never voting again? You hear it constantly. So remember, they want this to spread too, because they believe the idea of voter fraud will demoralize our people and turn them off from voting, which makes winning for them even easier in the future. So that is why this issue is so cancerous, and why we've got to do everything we can to fight it, to turn it around, but not lose hope and to maintain the faith.
That's well said. So Richard, do you want to talk about how there's a personal cost to speaking out against this?
Yeah, there is. Matt is 100% right. And actually, just to top off what you just said, we see that in the polling in Georgia right now. There is a group of Republicans, coastal central region of the state. They are mad. And, you could cut off your nose to spite your face is really where, you can't focus all so much on the down and then lose hope and then lose an election that you might have been able to win. All right. But yeah, there is a personal cost to this. I had maybe 40,000 followers. We did Inside the Numbers. I taught people on the show how to poll. We would do waiting live. We would watch the live results roll in before the election. That was the show that we did. Nothing controversial, even though that does kind of threaten certain people that don't release much data and just kind of give you a headline number. And then the fraud puts it up on the big board, and we forecast elections like that. But when we did start to look into voter fraud, like Matt, I saw all of these records on Twitter. People thought they were finding. And I thought to myself, you know what? I have access to the voter files. I could simply just open them up. That specific case was in Michigan. Let me pull a small subset of change of address flags, which is what Matt was just referring to. These are people, they no longer live in the state. The voter files are dirty. They're dead people. They're people who no longer live there because, you know, when mom and dad die or grandma and grandpa die, you grieve. You get the funeral set up. You hold a service, and then you need time for yourself to heal. What you don't do is call the local supervisor of elections and say, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa passed away. Please take them off the voter rolls, right? It does that. When you move to another state, maybe you got to close on a house, you get a 26 footer, you hire the moving men. It's crazy. You deal with it and you enjoy your house. What you don't do is call your old state and say, I now moved from Florida to North Carolina. Please take me off the voter rolls. That doesn't happen. So the state rolls are dirty and they take a long time. You can actually target them if you're a pollster like me, which we do. So I did in Michigan. Once my follower count started to grow because of what we were finding, and I got zapped. Boom. Just taken right off Twitter an hour after speaking to PolitiFact and telling PolitiFact, no, they cannot have my data, which is what they wanted. And I was gone. Just like that. Never a warning, never a suspension. Never a challenge suite. Nobody ever reported me for anything. I was gone. My polling firm was gone. And my wife was gone. Just like that.
Just her Twitter account, right?
Just the Twitters. Yep. We're all still here. I'm on back on Twitter now, but I never would have been if you know what? I got to hat tip him. If Tucker Carlson didn't call me and have me on the show, I wouldn't even be back. Wouldn't even be back. That's 100% true, and I got to hat tip them for that because I'd still be off right now. But they still didn't let my wife back on. Why? She handles the media requests. If somebody calls and says, I want to have Rich on to talk about what he's finding in Michigan with voter fraud, they got to talk to my wife. So they can't have her back on because DMs is really how she did it. So if you're a little nerd from Twitter and you want to go through somebody's messages and see what they're saying, you would see Laura's a pretty important person. So they kept her off. But they couldn't handle the business and they put the business back up. But there is a personal cost to this and you're not allowed to talk about this. There's even a professional cost. So we deal with a lot of people in the media. I may not agree with them, but I respect them. We report results together. We put up the cool interactive visual graphics so you guys can see faster than the AP, by the way, how the elections are rolling in on our website. And those guys do not want you to talk about this. They don't. They want you to shut up. In fact, my email is filled with them. So, you know, there's a few people who are willing to do it. And yeah, so it is worth noting.
And look, and if we're honest about the history of our country, voter fraud has been around for quite some time. Lyndon Baines Johnson would not have been a United States senator if it wasn't for Joan Wells County and Ballot Box 13 and Duval County. Same with JFK in 1960. And we're talking about very thin margins, especially in Georgia and Arizona. So, Kyle, how did we get here? How did we get to the place where all of a sudden all of our voting rules were changed? We have all these machines coming in. Where did we go wrong? What fight did we not pick?
Well, it all began when people began forgetting the basics of government that everybody here knows, and that's the legislature makes the laws and the government or the governor executes the laws, correct? So is there something that I missed where this changed in 2020 for some unknown reason? So here's the problem. To paraphrase Edmund Burke, the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. Where were the Republican legislators screaming bloody murder the second the governors decided they wanted to change the absentee ballot and mail-in rules, right? So they should have screamed bloody murder from day one. Okay, so when these mass mail-in ballots come in, there's research going back. You can look at the Carter Center, MIT, Caltech, all of them telling you mass mail-in ballots are untrustworthy. But what did we find in this election? Okay, first of all, the margin is 0.06% of in these swing states is what gave Biden the election in the main swing states to put him over the top. This is very, very improbable, right? So what else do you see in these swing states? The ballot rejection rates, going to everything that they're saying, especially in Pennsylvania and especially in Georgia, are enough to tip the election. If you have a standard ballot rejection percentage, and Georgia was 0.6% and in Pennsylvania 0.28%, okay, total, not just the signature matching, in case anybody's fact checking, okay? This is a Ballotopedia, all right? So this is enough to tip the election in these two states. And if you go to Nevada, the things that he was talking about in Clark County, very suspect things across the board, Arizona, you did not need widespread fraud. This is the typical dishonest framing of the media. They try to set the frame. Oh, there has to be widespread. This is not the litmus test, people. This is specific precincts and counties in the United States where we have witnesses with sworn affidavits with putting their personal names and their faces and a stake in this game. They have skin in the game. These journalists have no skin in the game. You know what these so-called journalists are doing? We're having smoke in the room, right? The great stuff that Matt and Rich are pointing out, smoke everywhere. They're saying, don't you dare ask if there's a fire. Don't say if no. There's no fire here. Oh, and then the most secure election in American history. Okay, Chris Krebs. All right, great job with Oracle Solar Winds, by the way. Stand-up job. You're doing such a fantastic thing. Only compromising our nuclear database, for God's sake, and our election security is supposed to be top-notch. Most secure election in American history. Give me a break. They didn't check a single machine. They didn't check a missing flash drive like in Georgia. They didn't check any of this stuff because these companies have been exposed completely. 100% exposed in the media. The mainstream media exposed them. Don't look at me, Politico. Don't look at me. You reported it. Did you not? Bloomberg? So who has the credibility problem? Is it me for pointing out your work before the election? Or is it you for changing your narrative because you got the result that you wanted? Right? Is that what happened? I think it's what happened.
I want to tell you guys about Good Rancher. Good Ranchers began with the standard of bringing top quality, 100% American-born, raised and harvested meat to families across America. This vision was instilled into them from their grandparents that owned community grocery stores and believed in trust, charity, and family values. GoodRanchers.com partners directly with only American ranches from across the United States to bring the highest quality meat straight to your door. Have the best Christmas ever with Good Ranchers free hickory honey holiday ham. Every new subscription gets a Berkshire hickory honey smoked ham for free. Our Berkshire hams are 100% no antibiotics ever, 100% hormone free, 100% born and raised in America. As always, Good Ranchers is 100% American beef and chicken and now pork. GoodRanchers.com. Get 100% American beef raised right to your door. Beef the way it used to be. Skip the grocery store lines and it will be delivered to you for free and the taste is always delicious. Don't waste your money on cheap cuts and overseas beef. Buying from the other guys, get the American beef cuts your family deserves with Good Ranchers. Buy today at GoodRanchers.com. Again, GoodRanchers.com delivers your favorite meats right to your door. Perfect for grilling out or dinners at home. Go to GoodRanchers.com to view all their American beef and chicken packages. Use the promo code CHARLIE to get your free Berkshire Hickory honey smoked ham with your purchase. That's GoodRanchers.com right now. Use the promo code CHARLIE. Get the Berkshire ham free for a limited time only. GoodRanchers.com, promo code CHARLIE.
So Matt, I want to ask you, what can now be done? We're running up against deadlines. Courts aren't hearing a lot of these cases. The Supreme Court wants nothing to do with this. We could go on and on and on about the evidence that we have. I mean, just for example, in California, there was a recent indictment of a guy that tried to fraudulently register 8,000 voters, and he got arrested, got very little mainstream media coverage. So this idea that there's no evidence it's the exact opposite. There's an overwhelming amount of evidence. And if the New York Times and Washington Post actually sent their investigative units into this, they would find so much evidence that I think it would tilt the election easily in Donald Trump's favor. And that doesn't even count the signature verification, all that sort of stuff. So now what can be done?
Well, just to jump on what you just mentioned there, the data that I've developed here, for over a month and a half, I said, if any journalist wants to come, I can't put it out because much of what we have would end up quote unquote doxing people. We've been able to put up, you know, some of the stuff on Twitter, but if I put up stuff with names on it, I'm done. But I've invited journalists to come you know, sidestep me. I will show it to you. And I will, you know, you can validate that this was done, how it was done, anything you want. And I was able to do that. And just until just about a week or so ago, when one of the court, you know, the court cases expert witnesses kind of got to buckle down. But it, and but the door will open for that again in about a week or so, I think, with that offer to just come see what I've got. Come see, because they're always interested. When we were first starting this project, they were very eager to write about, oh, these Trump guys are trying to do some stuff and they're not finding anything. And it's just this big waste of time and money. And they were, because we were at our, you know, this basically day two or day three, right? Washington Post was eager to send a photographer to come take pictures of us. A really good photographer, really good photos, expensive, many column inches everywhere. But when we started finding stuff, nothing. And, you know, I openly invited any journalist who wants to can come sit next to me and I can show them everything. I'll show them the code, all this stuff. I got basically three journalists that want to. Epoch Times, which is very cool. We got some fans in the house. I got to tell you, I mean, they actually came at me with scrutiny. A journalist is actually still emailing me on a daily basis saying, hey, you said here sounds different than what's over here, and like coming out with scrutiny. It's a legit news organization, right? They're not giving me a free pass. Also some television reporter in Arizona, and we're working on getting him the access, because it's hard when he's not sitting next to me, and I'm, you know, just very careful. And Tim Pool. Tim Pool actually he's some Tim Pool fans in the house. Great, yeah. Phenomenal guy, great show. No one else had any interest. But here's your question was, well, what can we do? Well, it's really, well, what can you do, right? Well, but how do you fight it? I mean, it's not like we're going to do an insurrection here, right? I mean, because, no, but here's what we can do. But really, what can you do as an individual? So assuming we're not going the insurrection route, which I strongly disagree, I would not say go down the insurrection route. There are a couple of things that you can do on a policy basis locally. So first of all, on your county and state level, you've got to insist on a couple of things. First of all, is you've got to have validation of absentee ballots. Now, I advocate validation through fingerprint, which is machine readable. I've got a 6-year-old cell phone that I use in my pocket. It can read my fingerprint. And it's like 99% certain it's me. And honestly, if the one guy who is that 0.1% who also matches me gets it, you win. You know, you got me. You got me. But fingerprint matching is machine readable. It's something that can be validated. And I think that sending out that kit, you know, any concealed carry, don't raise your hand. But if you've ever gotten a permit, the government has you do a fingerprint thing. You have to do it sometimes through the mail, like Utah, right? No big deal, right? Just one fingerprint. That's all it takes to validate it. So validate absentee ballots. It would eliminate, I guess, I would say 90 to 95% of the illegal ballots. The second thing is you've got to insist that your state do hygiene on their list, on their voter list. They've got to run it up against NCOA, validate it. They've got to do true rigor on that because there's so much dead wood on it, and that dead wood creates a space, not just for voter fraud, illegal ballots, but for the suspicion of it, which is just as dangerous. The third thing you've got to do is, and this is great because a few years ago, the left was very excited about this idea, but now it's kind of quiet. You must have open source in everything electronic related to voting equipment. You cannot have these black boxes where the company says, oh, we can't show you the software because that would violate our proprietary licenses. And you cannot have that in a democracy. You cannot not be able to see the counting machine, the software that does it. And there's a lot of open source software out there already because there are third world countries that have serious problems or the people won't trust the outcome. So we've developed this open source software. It's completely free. Microsoft has developed open source software for voting equipment. It doesn't run Windows or anything like it. It's completely open source. I know, this is a little bit technical, but if your state isn't running open source voting equipment, you've got to get rid of it. But here's the other problem. And this is my fourth solution. If you have a state legislator who signed on, or a state governor or somebody else in your government who said, hey, it's okay to use closed source stuff from Dominion, they're not qualified to do their job. They're not qualified because, look, we're citizens of this country. We have problems with the government. Postal Service loses packages all the time. Medicare messes up your billing. Social Security mails the check to the wrong address, right? We know there are potholes. There are potholes all over the roads where you live, right? We understand that, right? We understand our government's not perfect. But if the system by which we correct all those problems is corrupt, as corrupt as, or ineffective, or in which we can have no confidence, then we're kind of done as a country. So you've got to hold your local officials accountable. You've got to, when you vote in your primaries, you should be insisting that they answer questions related to these policy initiatives I've suggested. And, you know, beyond that, we've just got to register more of our people. This is going to kind of be my thing for the next couple of years. I've got a C3 called Look Ahead America, where we're trying to register and turn out to vote disaffected, patriotic Americans. So that's going to be my mission for the next 4 years. You can make it your mission to make sure everybody you know is registered, make sure they're educated, and hold your folks at the county level accountable. Because it's hard to get a senator to respond to your phone call or email, right? It's hard. But you can get your county people to, and in many cases, you get your state legislatures and some of your statewide officials. You have personally got to hold them accountable. And in those primaries, you've got to be aware of where they vote on these issues. And, you know, maybe if they're not right on these issues, maybe you need to step up and run against them. Maybe we have some future candidates in this audience.
Well, and it's been a real teaching moment. And look, I want to get Kyle's input on the open source part of it, because I saw that you were not nodding your head.
No, I think that's an excellent point. If it's open source, it solves a lot of the problems with the proprietary source codes that we see with the SNS and Dominion. And of course, there's research out that suggests that Biden won 5% more on Dominion voting systems than any other voting method. And Hart InterCivic, which is another big player, 6%. And, you know, and there are some others who are less. Yes, and that was within range, ironically. But this disparities in voting system methods that have come up where you sample where the voting systems are being used, this should not happen. This is statistical nonsense. Anybody who does political science research methods knows this. What we need is you people to be proactive and to really be forward-looking. It's really the conservative instinct to be backward-looking, because we love our country, we love our heritage, but we need to be proactive and forward-looking, right? And what does that mean? We need to have better surveillance of places that are highly suspect for fraud. We need a task force, maybe an FBI task force, that maybe does surveillance and shows if people are moving ballots in suspiciously to polling centers. All sorts of things that we can be done. We need to use our brains and our activism and also go around the corporate media and big tech, which is a huge threat to us. Talk to people. I talked to an Uber driver who hates Trump and who's a moderate. I got him won over to my side pretty easily by pointing out things that the left and the Democrats have said about these private voting system companies. They're not trustworthy if they're hiding their source code. This is very simple stuff to win people over, but we need to have human conversations. Don't rely on big tech. Don't rely on corporate media. They're not representing our interests right now, for the most part. And I think that, yes, go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, it's great. I completely agree.
Yeah. So I just think that we need to be proactive, forward-looking, going to what Matt said. Don't let them demoralize us, because that's when they win. We outnumber them, okay? Forget the stuff in the streets in Portland, all the smoke screen and the AstroTurf and the highest turnout by percentage since 1900. Come on, give me a break. This guy didn't even show up. Is anybody who here saw Harris Biden signs in their neighborhoods? Anybody see this? Like, where did it happen? Okay, a few. But I think the going out of business signs in these blue states far outnumber the Biden-Harris signs, okay? So we don't believe, the optics are not there. It's a smoke screen. Don't believe your eyes. They don't have the consensus on their side. We're the majority. They can play pretend that they're the majority all they want. They're not. We need to stay confident and assertive and hold the state legislatures to the fire, because we need to do like in Maryland and some counties in Virginia and just take back, say, we're going to do paper ballots until we get this fixed.
And look, there's examples of this. So, you know, you have very weak governors, you know, like Brian Kemp in Georgia, who has quite honestly been one of the greatest disappointments, I think, in American political history. And he went and asked everyone for their support. He asked Trump to come in and help bail him out against Stacey Abrams. But here's the thing. We can be critical. We should be critical. We should be critical of the lockdown Republicans like Charlie Baker and DeWine. We should be critical of any Republican that mandates that you stay at home for curfew, all that sort of nonsense. But we should also talk about building up the people that are doing a good job. So here's a good example. This state used to have a disaster of an election system 3 years ago. And we forget about this. 3 years ago, this state was a circus. Just go to Broward County. There was a woman that ran it called Brenda Snipes. You think that Georgia is a mess? This woman, they would bring in ballots from, I think, like the Caribbean. It was like all over the place. And it was this week-long counting, just carnival. Ron DeSantis wins. Ron DeSantis, who might be America's greatest governor with Kristi Noem. Seriously. And this is the difference between someone like Ron DeSantis and Brian Kemp. So Ron DeSantis says, you know what? I'm going to fight to make sure no one has to go through what I went through again, which is a long, drawn out county election, Broward County, this whole thing, and they're suing. And Rick Scott and Bill Nelson actually had a tighter race that year. So he fired Brenda Snipes immediately. He's a racist, all these horrible things. He doesn't care. Doesn't faze him. He gets into court, and Ron DeSantis says the following. His position will be that if you do not have the election results of the state of Florida in your county, and by, I think it's like 95% by 9:30 Eastern, then you got to get in front of a judge and tell them why. It's that simple. The Democrats lost their mind. The Democrats sued endlessly. And the Democrats brought him into court and they said, this is racist. This is terrible. And Ron DeSantis and his wonderful team, they said, no, the state of Florida, it's going to be our setting the example for the rest of the country. Now, you want to know a fact? More people vote by mail in this state.
That's right.
Than almost any other state in the country, except maybe California. More people vote by mail in this state than in Georgia. Yep. And so then why is it that in Georgia, they're bringing ballots on underneath tables. They got ballots all over the place. One word, leadership. That's it. It's this state has a leader. Georgia does not. And so to complete the point, what happens when we have fair and free elections? A state like Florida, where Donald Trump in 2016 won by 110,000 votes. Is that about 120,000 votes? He won by 400,000 votes in 2020 in Florida. That's what happens. That's what happened. How did that happen, right? Well, it happened because he campaigned in Florida, he had a great message, Miami-Dade County. But also, there has not been one allegation of voter fraud in Florida. And here's why. I'm a registered voter in the state of Florida. I fled Illinois proudly. And I went to go vote early. And I've told the story many times. And when I went to go vote, I was, you know, asked for my ID, what a concept. And a guy comes in, and very kind of strange guy, and he asks to vote, and they ask for his name and his identification. They say, and he says, well, the records show you've already got an absentee ballot. So I go, no, I want to vote in person. And they say, well, sir, according to Florida state law, you have to surrender your absentee ballot and you can't vote. They had an argument and he's like, well, I want to vote right now. And they said, well, you can vote provisionally, but if they find out you submitted your absentee ballot, you can go to jail. Argument, he leaves. Now, maybe he was just having a bad day. Maybe he truly lost the ballot. Here's the point. What if he was trying to commit voter fraud? I saw that just get stopped in real time in the state of Florida. And then you look at these other states where they are afraid to pick the fights. And I bring this for a reason. I want you to close this out, Richard, which is if we are serious about fixing this, then we need to look at where elections are currently working. And in a state where you have an elderly population that votes by mail, you have a lot of people that had more vote by mail requests in Florida than ever before, and they were able to have all those results in by 9:30 Eastern and declare victory for Donald Trump. That is a test case to model for the rest of the country. And that's exactly what you should do. Richard.
Yeah. 14 million voters on the records in the state. I mean, 14 million, sometimes double, triple, far more than some of these other states that had issues. And, you know, I think Matt and Kyle both said it really best. You have got to make election reform, election integrity, a plank. It's got to be a plank, like the Second Amendment is a plank. It is like, it is that serious. It is, it really, we have to liken it to that degree, because this is really, Florida's a great example, but until it got cleaned up here, it looked a lot like some other places. It was a mess. And you're disproportionately, it's not even a matter the rolls are dirty. It's really worse than that. You're at a disadvantage. So in Nevada, Clark County is about 7 in 10, roughly, of the total statewide vote. It's 84.5% of the total change of address flags on the voter. So not only is it dirty, but even if everybody wanted to cheat and hand in change of address flags statewide, didn't matter which party it was, you'd still be at a disadvantage. You couldn't make it up because it's dirty in bluer areas. So it really has to be taken that seriously, because we are a self-governing society. And if you lose hope, if people lose hope, that the system just doesn't work, then history tells us it really gets ugly from there, folks. It gets ugly. So it's either we fix this, or like Matt said, it's it. That's it. It's a wrap. It's a wrap. And it'll get darker from there. Ohio also did a fantastic job. You'll hear a lot of these people discuss Ohio, the state of Ohio. I mean, still not great, not Florida, not gold standard, but I bring them up because people, and I'm sure Matt's heard this excuse, well, we're not allowed to handle the absentee ballots until a certain time. Ohio is one of the most strict states for when they can begin to process absentee ballots. It's a nonsense excuse. Nonsense. And in Florida, you can do it 24 days, I believe, up until the election. So some of those states have to change their laws. And if those candidates are in a primary, do not support this, or even do not take it seriously, they have to go. It's that it has to be like that. If your issue is the Second Amendment, or if your issue is whatever it may be, economic freedom, whatever your real key central issue is, you have to put election integrity right next to it in your heart. You have to find a place for it, make a spot for it, and fight for it like you would fight for that top issue. And you've always felt that passionate.
Just to embellish Rich's point, voting is mankind's system for avoiding warfare. That is what we have developed. So if you want to avoid warfare in the United States or political violence, if you look this in the literature, I'm not making this up, we need to have legitimate elections that are verifiable, free, and fair. So all parties, at the end of the election, they put down their, you know, they put down their weapons or whatever, and they say, no, you're right, we lost fair and square. We'll work harder than you next time. We'll get you next time. It's not like that. The left is dead serious about winning. Like Charlie was saying, they think they're really fighting Mussolini in their illusion, in their minds, and who knows. But we don't want that in this country, because if we fall prey to that, liberty is over for generations. We become everything that the founders warned us against.
Yeah, but remain hopeful. Elections can be fair and free. You are in a state that does it right. And so every time this gets brought up, be a solution-oriented activist. Don't just complain. Ask your leaders in Georgia and Arizona and everywhere you're across the country that has these screwed up elections, why can the third most populous state in the country do it correctly? That's a great counter, and they have no counter with more vote by mail than almost any other state. God bless you guys. Thank you so much. Let's give it up for this panel.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Please email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless. Speak to you soon.